Shalom Aleichem, Chaver. This is the National Council of Young Israel. We welcome all the Rabbanim. We welcome Rebbe for conference call number 119. Thank you, Rebbe.
You're very welcome. Let's begin. Question number one. A doctor prescribes vitamins to his first patient. Do they require Pesach certification? Or can we say it is considered refuah and therefore not considered achshave? That's a very good question. I believe that as a general principle, we can consider vitamins, especially if prescribed by a doctor, as medicine. And therefore, as we paskin lahalacha, we don't say achshave. And therefore, since it's not considered a food, it'd be permissible. Now, the Shakas Arya says you do say achshave by refuah, but we don't paskin like him. And therefore, the bottom line is, in such a circumstance, it's permissible to take these vitamins. Of course, if it's a comparable vitamin, which is kosher to Pesach, there are these long lists of vitamins and other medicines that have no shayla of chametz whatsoever. Of course, it's better to use those if they are, in fact, available. Question two. Can a business be open on Chol HaMoed in consideration of it being a Dover HaOved? That's the word that should be there, I assume. Since base must still pay taxes and rent. There's a slight inaccuracy in the phraseology of the question, but we understand what it is. It's interesting, in Siman Tov Kuf Lamed Tes, Hilchos Chol HaMoed, the Eish L'Avraham Buchach talks about it a little bit. The impression conveyed by the Piske Truvis there in Tov Kuf Lamed Zayin, footnote 10 and 11, is that according to the Buchacher, it would be permissible, but I don't think that's quite accurate. He says rather what others say, namely that the only time it would be permissible is if the taxes and rent are limited to days when the store is open. So then they're charging you, by the day. So then it might be considered a davar ha'aveh. But they charge you by the month or the year, which is prevalent nowadays, then we assume that it's not considered to be a davar ha'aveh. It's like all other expenses, which you can make up by being open for business on Chol HaMoed, but we do not allow you to do so. So therefore, the bottom line is I do not believe that we can consider taxes and rent nowadays to qualify a business as a davar ha'aveh. Question three. If one has guests coming second days of Yom Tov, can linen be washed on Chol HaMoed? The rule is, when it comes to washing on Chol HaMoed, you're not supposed to wash clothes. The reason being that if we let you wash clothes on Chol HaMoed, you're going to not have time to wash them before Yom Tov, and you come into Yom Tov dirty. There are exceptions to the rule, as it's quoted lehalacha, that if a person runs out of clothing which are typically dirty, such as children's clothing or underclothing, they simply run out, then the post can say you're allowed to wash it on Chol HaMoed, because they could not prohibit you from washing and make you more dirty, since these clothes typically, or other types of launderable items, typically get dirty right away. They talk about towels and other such items. Today, the custom in most parts of the society that we service is that whenever a person comes as a guest, they get clean linen. Never was used by anybody else. Not in the olden days, it wasn't that way. But that's how it's done nowadays, and therefore, since nowadays it's done that way, so it depends on every generation. That's found also in the Piskei Teshuvos, Siman Tov Kuf Lamed Aleph, footnote 15, depends upon the generation. And therefore, in our generation, I believe that the linen is considered to be something which gets dirty as soon as a person lies there for one night. It's called dirty. It could be clean as a whistle. It's called dirty in people's minds. And therefore, it'd be permissible. And again, only if you run out, as he writes in footnote 16. If you run out, then if you didn't run out, you still have some more left in your closet, you're required to use those rather than wash linens on Chol HaMoed. Question number four. If one is going to a hotel for Yom Tov, please elaborate which type of Shabbos elevators are allowed. Would using the Shabbos elevator on Yom Tov be more lenient, be that we only have to be concerned for Nolad, as on Havara, we can say Mitoch. Moreover, are escalators more lenient than even on Shabbos? Let's start with the last point. Yes, escalators is assumed to be permissible to go on Shabbos. Elevators is a problem. We use the word Shabbos elevator. The word Shabbos elevator can mean different things. On a simple level, it means it's an automatic elevator. You don't have to press the buttons on a timer. It goes up and down all the time. That's the original Shabbos elevators. Now, the big dispute among the Gedolei HaPoskim is a Mutar or Asur on Shabbos. Shlomo Zalman is consistently Mekel, and others were more Machmir. And should I say it, there's been quite a bit of a change in the, we'll call it the Haredi sectors of the Holy Land, where until now they were more strict, but as they began to have to build more high-rises, because simply considerations of space, it became a little bit more lenient as far as Shabbos elevators are concerned. There are some mechanical issues. There was a very wonderful Rabbi Levius von Kalperin, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who wrote a whole book called Maaliyot B'Shabbat, Elevators on Shabbos. And he's critical of some of the theories propounded by Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Orbach, that's how, as found in the Sefer Shmira Shabbos Kilchosa. It can be found in the newest edition. You'll find it in his discussion of Perek Chav Gimel and Sif Lamed Ches and footnote Kuf Samech Rav fills up a whole page. The primary focus of Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, believe it or not, is not going up, but going down. The question is worried about Havara going up. You use more electricity, if you will. There, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman is making on many grounds. It's not a noticeable change in the amount of energy coming out of the power plant, etc., etc. Going down was a bigger problem, paradoxically, because apparently they use your weight in order to save electricity. It changes the circuitry, and your weight itself could be powering the brakes to stop the elevator and the lights that go on to the panel to tell you what floor you're on. So there's some problems. Shlomo Zalman has many leniencies, a whole page full of leniencies. Would have happened anyway. Zeyachol v'zeyneyachol. It's only a body, not an action. Many, many leniencies. And the Midrash Olam, I believe, is to be lenient following up Shlomo Zalman. There was a tumult a couple of years ago. Oh, the new elevators and the whole new story. And there was a picture in the press in Eretz Yisrael of a gathering of many Rabbanim in Rav Nissen Karelitz Zatzal's house. All the Rabbanim were wearing their kaputas and their hats, and Rav Nissen Karelitz, in whose home it was, sitting in a white long sleeve shirt with no hat and no kaputa. It's his house. Sitting next to him on his side is a man with a knitted yarmulke with a white short sleeve shirt. That man was Rav David Rafal Bannett, the Chrono Levracha, passed away recently at the age of over 100. He is related to me, my sister's father-in-law. He was Rabbi Halperin's right-hand man when it came to the elevators, Maaliyot B'Shabbat. And he was an engineer. When he turned 100, they made him a nice party in the Machon Technologi in Bayit Pagan, and my brother-in-law spoke. He told me that this whole tumult is nothing really changed. The Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, who was lenient, 50 years ago, would be lenient today as well. And Rabbi Yashiv, who was strict today, was strict 50 years ago also. So nothing really changed. So it's a machlokas gedolei apotkin. As a result, I tell people, if you can avoid it, you should avoid it and walk. If you can't avoid it, you can be lenient. For many people, it's much easier to go down than to go up. You don't have to strain so much. And since the bigger problem, believe it or not, is going down, those people in the middle, I tell them, they can rely upon the Shabbos elevator to go up, and they should walk down. Again, if a person really can't do it, they can be makel both ways. If he's able to do it, it should be machmer both ways. So it all depends on the circumstance and the individual. Question number 5. If an oven breaks on Yom Tov, can a nochri be prepared on Yom Tov, being that it is machshiri ochol nefesh sheyev shel asoso libol yom? Technically speaking, it is okay. There are problems. How will you get the nochri to come on Yom Tov? It sounds like it's really a far-out possibility. Technically speaking, it's okay. The truth is, in most houses today, all the food is cooked before Yom Tov, most of it. And they can probably manage with what's cooked from before Yom Tov. Maybe you have a problem heating it up. In these kinds of circumstances, and even in the case of cooking, before you want to get a goy on Yom Tov, probably better off trying to speak to a good neighbor who has an oven that works and utilize that oven for an next-door neighbor to either cook food or more likely heat up food. That's a better option. But technically speaking, there is a cooler of makshirim sheyavshem miyodyom, and therefore this might be permissible. I use the word might be because there are so many details when it comes to the sugars of makshirim that we try, you know, when we have no choice, we have no choice. But sometimes when we do have a choice, we try to stay away. So therefore, just to repeat, it depends on the precise circumstances. If indeed it qualifies as a situation in Makshirin, Shefshe B'Yom Tov, which is the questioner's assumption, then it's permissible. You can't go against the din, but Furish and the Gemara. But again, in terms of the details, there are all kinds of details when it comes to these things. And therefore, I would say it's probably better, easier. And this way you'll know what will happen. If the Nochri says he's going to come, until he comes, it'll be really Motzei Yom Tov. So it's worthwhile trying to get to a neighbor, if you ask me. The details of this are found in the Siman Tov Kuf Tes. Tov Kuf Tes. And there's a whole discussion about this. We paskin halacha that it's okay, even though some say it's not okay. And the whole discussions about what is and what is not okay. Again, it's a bit complicated, honestly. And therefore, again, it's certainly permissible to a goy, because even if it's a machlokes, if it's done to a Jew even, in some situations, there are discussions of what happens in a case, for example, of a situation where they give an example where something breaks. Something breaks. So if it's what's called Nasa Liyomim Harbe, some poskim say it's a problem. And if you fix an oven, it's called Nasa Liyomim Harbe. Again, many, many more details we can go into right now, but a person should look at Siman Tov Kuf Tes, take a look at Shara Tzion, Sidkot and Beis, which is a kli, which is normally done, the Liyomim Harbe. Again, Machlokas HaPoskim, so it's better to do it, go to the next door neighbor. Okay, let's go on. 6. If someone shloshim is cut short by Pesach, is it see Mishnah made the Zecha Nishmas the Meis made before Yom Tov when the shloshim officially ends? Or is it more appropriate to have the Siyam on the 30th day, which falls out on Chol HaMoed Pesach? No question about it. It's more appropriate on the 30th day, which is Chol HaMoed Pesach. The laws of Yom Tov cutting short Avelus only means it cuts short the Nihuge Avelus. But whenever it comes to like Dine Shemayim and these of this nature, it does not cut short. For example, if someone got up from Shiva this week and the Shloshim will end on Friday, Erev Pesach, and after Yontif is over, he's still within the 30 days from the Levaya. He still has the Kedima to daven for the Yomid, for example, over someone else who's beyond the Shloshim and Yud Beis Kodesh. You'll say, what do you mean? Shloshim ended on Pesach. No. Nihuge Shloshim ended on Pesach. But when it comes to Dinei Shamayim, it doesn't. And therefore, the result, since the Siyim is presumably that of that order, it should be postponed until 30 full days. Number 7. We have a large Seder on Friday night at my shul, and we usually heat the food in a chafing dish with a pan of water underneath, then a sterno underneath that to keep the food warm. Is the Shabbos permissibility of how to do this correctly? This will be both for dry food and soup. If I understand this system correctly, all the food is placed on this system before Shabbos, and once it's removed, it's no longer replaced. We call this in our language Shehiya. Shehiya. Shehiya means you leave it off from before Shabbos. If the food is fully cooked, according to Ashkenazim, even if it's half cooked, there's no problem of Shehiya. You can leave it on, even on an open fire, certainly in this pan, and therefore it's permissible, whether it's dry food or soup, doesn't matter. It's all okay. Question 8. How do you prepare a non-Pesach digital scale to measure shiurim before Yom Tov? You just cover it with tinfoil, and this way it's no problem. 9. I'm in the process of moving from state to state. Both addresses will be on the Shtar Mechira. If I go from apartment to apartment to visit on Chol HaMoed, may I bring boxes of chametz to kelim and leave them in the new apartment? Now, chametz to kelim are not sold to a goy. If you sell your kelim to a goy, you have a problem with tevilas kelim if the Yom Tov is over. So the fact that there's a Shtar Mechira which has both addresses does not affect the chametz to kelim at all. There's another problem over here, which is Tircha Yisera, which we, generally speaking, do not allow on Chol HaMoed. But again, so many details, whether it's a kind of a dover of it, you can't do it any other time. As a rule, it's better to avoid Tircha Yisera on Chol HaMoed, which this sounds like very much. So better to bring it after Yom Tov. 10. What is the procedure for buying back the chametz from the goy after Pesach? It's very simple. We ask, the kinyanim, if that's the question, the procedure, the kinyanim do exactly the same kinyanim that we do on Erev Pesach. We do actually 3 kinyanim. One is kesef. So, for example, if the goy gives me kesef on Erev Pesach, give him back all the kesef on Motzi Pesach, then we shake hands on the deal. And then we do what's called Kinyan Chalipin. That means on Erev Pesach, the Goy gives me a pen, and on Motzi Pesach, I give him whatever I have, a pen, a yarmulke, a watch, whatever I happen to have handy, and those 3 Kinyanim. Now, the other Kinyanim that we do on Erev Pesach are only for the rental, and for Kinyanim which go through the rental, so that we don't do that at all. And the Shtar was typically returned to us on Motzi Pesach, with all the authorization forms, but that's not really part of the Kinyan itself. So, my shtar is being quoted, 2 cents per person right now. The reason it's 2 cents is because, sadly, 1 cent is less than a pruta. The price of silver went up some years back. The rest, on or before, well, he has my dates from 2019. The understanding that the sale is absolute and effective immediately, and that the balance due is considered a debt from buyer to seller, the non-payment of which shall in no way affect, that's a typo, should be affect, the validity of the buyer's title to the chametz sold. Which means, he owes me money, doesn't pay me, the sale is still a valid sale. We don't say if he didn't pay up the debt, that the sale becomes invalidated. So the question, on the one hand, the non-payment does not affect the validity of the sale. On the other hand, there's a payment deadline. First on or before, which is right after the Kesef Pesach. So the question is, what is the purpose, the end of the Pesach deadline, if non-payment by that time does not invalidate the sale? That's a very good question. The answer is very simple. That's the time, that's the crunch time in which he's required by the contract to pay us. Now, if he doesn't want to pay us, which typically happens, he has no alternative but to sell the chametz back to us that very night. If there was no deadline, he just hold on to it indefinitely, and people who want to reuse the chametz they had sold to the Goyen Erev Pesach would not be able to. This way, the moment the truth arrives, Motzi Pesach, the Goy can either pay up the money and keep the chametz, but if he doesn't want to do that, which is the likelihood, then the chametz is sold back to the Jews shortly after Pesach is over, and therefore they can use that food once again. Number 10. About Shuva owns a large whiskey collection or inherited a whiskey collection from the parents, which until now they never sold for Pesach. Must he destroy it? On a simple level, he has to destroy it. This is Chomet Sha'over Olav HaPesach. There are some authorities that, what they call B'mokom Hefson Meruba, attempt to find a series of leniencies. All these leniencies are rejected by the mainstream, but sometimes in a pinch, and I don't think this case is when it's being described, in a pinch, there may be some possibility to rely on a combination of these leniencies, such as some say that someone who is not observant, called a mumer, there is no din of chomet shavah v'pesach ne'esah. Some say this is not accepted. Some say that chomet shavah v'pesach is only prohibited to the person for whom who had it in his possession on Pesach. That would be, of course, in our situation, the person from whom he inherited it, or the person who owns it now. So he can't drink the whiskey, but he can sell it. There's a lot. He can sell the whiskey and let someone else drink it, according to that opinion, which also is rejected. And then there are those who say the whiskey is not chametz gomer, because after all, it's mostly water. We assume the halacha is considered to be chametz gomer. So therefore, in a very, very serious emergency, a rabbi perhaps has the right to combine all those three leniencies, even though it's three, based on three rejected opinions, if it's an absolute kind of an emergency. The case I'm reading over here between the lines is that it doesn't reach that level, and therefore it's best to be destroyed. Number 11. How much sauce or liquid must be added to the meat chicken to avoid the problem of flea the night of the Seder? Has to be a lot of water, a lot of sauce. How do you mention a lot? So they quote from the Shevet Alevi, Chelek Tes Simen Kufcha, where he says, in his words, Nikar Bo Morak Mamish. It's clearly visible, noticeable, that there's a lot of water there, like soup. In other words, a little water on the bottom of the pot wouldn't crack it. My view is, ideally, it should be submerged more than halfway. In general, we follow the majority. If you want to consider it to be submerged, it should be submerged. Not 100%, but 51%. Less than that is questionable. On the one hand, it's good to be strict. On the other hand, let's remember that the entire institution of not having tzli on Pesach is called a minig. So, again, ideally should be cooked in a lot of water. I mean, you would cook a pot roast or boiled chicken. Boiled chicken, I'm not an expert in the kitchen. If I understand correctly, the boiled chicken that we have on Pesach night is literally cooked in soup. The whole thing is submerged in the chicken soup. Totally. That's how I recall all the years, and that's, of course, the better way to do it. 12. It's from the previous situation. Cutting a davar charef on a cutting board. That the cutting board is no problem. But the chokmas adam is the problem. The dakei tshuva seems to posit the chokmas adam. That is true to some extent. I have in front of me a sefer by the wonderful name of davar charef. Beautiful name, a sefer of hundreds of pages, written by a tremendous Talmud Chacham from Eretz Yisrael, called davar charef. The rabbi, let's see, Rabbi Moshe Tuvia Dinkel, written almost 30 years ago. And he writes about this. What's it then cutting board could be a potential problem? Some say yes, some say no. So he writes as follows. I read his words. You had a meat knife on a milchika cutting board. It sounds like it's a really a big problem. As a matter of fact, the question that was raised last time was a fleshing knife on a parva plastic cutting board, which is much more lenient, obviously. Even if it's cut on a milchika one, das gedolei haro lehokel shein lesser asakelim afilu shneim b'nei yomon, even if they're both within the same day, v'chein hamachal in lesser, the food is also okay. This is what he calls from the gedolei haro. My understanding, gedolei haro means Rebbe Yashiv. Now, there are obviously many opinions over here. B'diyevi says shamatim Rebbe Yashiv. Lichatchila, I wish to rub the chok masanim. Okay. But with the Yeved, you don't have to worry about it. This is what he writes. So therefore, the question from last time, status of the cutting board, right? Benyomo, not Benyomo. He's even lenient when it comes to fleshings and milchiks. How much more so can we lenient with respect to the cutting board when it comes to milchiks and parva, or fleshings and parva? In any event, there are other opinions who are correct. Chokhma Sodom is a little bit more strict. But today's post more lenient. Question B, 12B, also back to last week. Shaking hands with a non-Jewish woman from Mechiras Chometz. I mentioned this last time, it's true. I think it was said that Rav Moshe held it's not an issue. I recall from my time in MTJ, Rav Moshe that held that even a non-affectionate touching is awesome. I think that the Rosh Hashivas held that under limited circumstances it would be okay. But again, the issue was whatever Moshe Zatzal held. You have to look in the Sefer and know what he did in practice. There are two things to always look, what's printed and what he did. So it's printed in Eben HaEzer Chelek Aleph End of Siman Nun Vav, where someone apparently, we said that some Adam Godel shook a woman's hand. So Rav Moshe writes as follows. Ulai Svirulei, maybe he thinks, the Ein Zed Derech Chiba V'Tava, not considered Derech Chiba V'Tava, in which case it's permissible. Aval Lamasa, Rav Moshe writes, Kosha Lismoch Al Zed. It's difficult to rely upon it. What does that mean, difficult to rely upon it? I know what he means. Many years ago, I was in a particular situation where there was a co-ed environment, but they were very, very strict not to allow any what they call the negia, touching boys and girls, but they allowed handshakes. So, I was witness to quite lengthy and you might even say romantic handshakes. That's exactly what Rav Moshe was afraid about. That's why he said it's not a good idea to shake a hand of the opposite gender. I'm asked this question all the time when people in the workplace. So I tell them, do what my Rebbe did. My Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, the Chorona of the Rocha, once some woman came in after the shir, and she said in a high-pitched voice, "Oh, Rabbi Soloveitchik, what a great pleasure to meet you." And she extended her hand, and there were, 100 eyes watching, what's going to be? So my Rebbe, the Rav, gave her the dead fish. Gave her like a little hand, and she shook it for a split second, and she put it down, It was a little bit of an uncomfortable situation. So I tell my Talmidim, give the person the dead fish. They say, we won't get hired if we give a dead fish. It means that we're a wimp. So then I gave a response. Well, then give the bone crusher. It's also not romantic. So we won't get hired then either. So I say, if necessary, give a very brisk handshake. Not brisk as in my Rebbe's hometown of brisk, but brisk, quick, in and out, 1, 2, 3. So it should clearly be a non-affectionate handshake. I must tell you, Reb Chaim Berlin, in the Tshuva Nishmas Chaim, says the opposite of what others have said. The elders say you can't shake a hand, it's Yehoram Valyavar. Of his right to give the right. Chaim Berlin said, on the contrary, you must shake a hand if it's extended to you, not to embarrass somebody. Clearly he held that Smutter Mikar Adin, not their Echiba. Rav Moshe agrees, not their Echiba Smutter. That's the same as subway question. New York subway are now in the headlines for other terrible reasons. But good old days of packed like sardines in the subways, bumping against men, against women, and vice versa. Rav Moshe said, it's Mutter, not their Echiba. Why did he take Kashal Ismach Hazeh? As I said before, you never know when non-chiba can turn into chiba. Rav Moshe himself, I have it for a witness, a chosh of a rov who grew up on the Lower East Side, saw a same thing that happened to my rabbi, happened to Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe shook the lady's hand also not to embarrass her. So it seems to me that if the rabbi has to shake a lady's hand from the chiba's chametz for a split second, it would also fall into the category. We don't have to worry about their chiba. Remember, it's in the presence of two Adam who are watching all this, and it's very businesslike. That's why I thought it was permissible. I thought Rav Moshe would be permissible. 13. May one go to a target range to learn to fire a pistol rifle, or is it considered Darche Hamori? Not Darche Hamori. It's a question of why you learn to fire a pistol and rifle. If indeed you really plan to become involved in self-defense on an advanced level, will it be safe for you to handle such a weapon, then it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah, you know. There's too many people who try to harm us these days. But if you're not, just you want to learn how to shoot a gun, I think it's terrible. Number one, it's dangerous. There is a danger involved in having any gun lying around. Number two, if you don't reach an advanced level, it's not going to serve any function. It's just a cruelty. Auxorium. Shooting guns is like kids, you give them these bang-bang games. It's not good for them. They grow up with some cruelty in their nature. So therefore, I would never allow such a thing unless you're doing it to really learn how to use it for potential self-defense. But then they have to be many, many hours of training and many, many safeguards. The average person, I believe, statistically is much safer without a gun around than with a gun around. Number 14. If one buys a cake that is to be served on Shabbos with writing on it, can the writing be smudged with a knife on Shabbos before cutting it to get around the mechika issue? Absolutely not. The smudging is itself mechika. Smudging is worse than a knife. A knife, you cut between the letters, it's probably okay. But the smudge, you erase the whole thing. So therefore, that's not a good idea. What you should do is, there are many, many aces for this. You cut around it, leave that part intact, or they have these, they write on a cookie on top and remove the cookie. There are many other ways to add around this problem. Mikra din, many posts will say it's mutter, but the custom is to be machba when it's possible. Number 15. A male with a Jewish mother and non-Jewish father was educated at Chabad schools during his youth. He has lived with Chabad menhagim because he was taught that way, but does not consider himself Chabad at all. His wife was raised in a strong Orthodox Syrian home. Are the children bound by the father's Chabad menhagim? May the family opt to follow Aram Tova menhagim from the mother's side. Normally, the father's side is the side that we follow when it comes to menhagim. Based on the pasuk, the mishpachosam, the veisavosam, that children belong to the family of the father. It's true in the world. Laws, many laws in Yerusha, all kinds of laws which are found in the Chumash. Mishpachosam levei savosam. That's why the father's name is typically used in some of the formalities of calling someone up for an aliyah, things of this nature. Now, there's an exception. For example, in a ksuba, you write Reuven ben Shimon. You don't write Reuven ben Rachel. And we don't even write Reuven ben Shimon v'Rachel. That's not traditional. Some people do it, but that's not proper because it was never done that way. But what will happen if Reuven's father is not Shimon? Reuven's father is a guy named John, or more likely in these days, Ivan, from Russia. I once had to do a ksuba in Moscow, going back now over 30 years ago, and I was about to write the name Uri ben Yosef, that's how he was called up to the Torah. And he stopped me and said, no. We always say it was my mother's father. My father's not Jewish. Father's not Jewish. Woo. What do you write in the Ksuba? You write Uri ben Rachel. As the Gemara has, Mori bar Rachel. The father was not Jewish. Then, in fact, the family is the mother's family. There is no father's family because the father officially, halakhically, does not relate to the child. So therefore, it seems to me that they not only may follow Aram Tovim and Hagim, they probably should preferably follow Aram Tovim and Hagim because the mother's Aram Tova, she's Syrian, and the father doesn't exist halakhically. Therefore, it would be better, in this case, to follow the customs of the mother. That's what I think in this particular case, although normally we follow the father's customs. 16. A local nursing facility I visited insists on a rapid COVID test before I enter the facility. If I want to visit on Shabbos or Yom Tov, may I take the test? Now, the local nursing facility called the Hebrew Home here in Riverdale also requires a rapid COVID test. I went there last Friday to visit someone. They made me go through a test. And they gave me a whole kit. And I put the Q-tip in my nose and then both nostrils. And then I put it into one solution and another solution. That's all nothing. The last stage is they asked me to take the final solution, and which has in it some of the potential COVID material, and take that solution and drop it into a pad of some sort, which I opened, and there, again, my understanding is that if it is one red line is negative, two red lines is positive. Right? There are different systems, but which I did, and I was negative, and I got in. I'm thank God negative. May you do that on Shabbos? Not so simple. There may be a problem we call Soveya. Soveya is a serious halakhic issue. That's not a daraisa over here. So it's very temporary, and you really don't even want it. But maybe you do want it. You want to get into the nursing home. They won't let you in without a one red line. Then only then they're going to let you in. Seems to me that the pshara should be, if it should be arranged before Shabbos at the local facility, that you will do the whole thing. But the very last step, to drop from that little mixing of all the chemical solutions into that pad onto which it's going to be the one or two red lines, that should be done by the nurse or the guy, the security person who was in charge of these things. I believe that in most cases, you'll be able to achieve that result, in which case it will be mutter and a mitzvah to the Bika Cholim on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. I wish everybody and all their families and the communities a Chag Pesach Kosher V'Sameach.
Rebbe, we thank you as well, and Bezrat Hashem will speak with Rebbe after Yom Tov. Thank you again, everyone. Have a Chag Kosher V'Sameach. Take care.